better off.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 182 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So, disclaimer, preface. We talked about what word to use for this, but disclaimer or preface, whatever you prefer, right off the bat. This is not going to be the most extensive podcast or the sharpest podcast you'll ever hear, because we are coming off of Dollars for Dingers weekend and we are tired, y'all. It's been a long weekend, but in a good way. We're tired in a good way.
It was two full games.
Yes. It was two full games worth of
it was two full games. And then some of us must have had some kind of head injury that led them to decide to do another game the next day.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah,
that's
a lot.
That was not me. I mean, I drove, 4 hours back to DC. So there's that.
Yes. You had travel plans.
I did. That's just right off the bat. We will obviously talk more about Dollars for Dingers later in the show, but a very quick, before we get into the more extensive feels, a very quick thank you to every single person who participated in Dollars for Dingers this year in any capacity. We really appreciate you. But before we talk about Dollars for Dingers and give our little spiel about it, we will first talk about the Mets. There are actually a few pretty notable things that have happened in the past week or so that don't really have much to do with the actual games that played that happened on the field, that were played, I should say. The number one bit of news is that Buck Showalter will not be returning as Mets manager next year. He did sort of a weird, somewhat cryptic, but not really, announcement of it in his pregame presser before the last game of the season on Sunday. And then it was made official later. This is not all that surprising because, related to the other bit of Mets news, it's not news that the Mets hired David Stearns, but his hiring was made official today. As we record this on Monday, earlier this afternoon, he had a presser to officially announce his hiring. So David Stearns obviously wants to bring in his own manager, as is the right of the incoming president of baseball operations. Steve Cohen made it abundantly clear that it was that this decision was driven by David Stearns and not by him, which I saw some people online that are angry about that and lol Metsing that, saying the Mets, what a mess they look like because they look like there's conflict. To me, I think that that's good and we shouldn't be angry about that. To me, and I don't know, Maggie and Linda, feel free to disagree with me, but to me, it speaks of an owner who is actually willing to hand over the reins and trust his president of baseball operations, and that he is not going to be micromanaging personnel decisions anymore.
Well, and if nothing else, I mean, that should be this is what they should all want us to believe.
Yes.
They should want us to not think that Steve Cohen is running the entire show. And of course, when there wasn't anybody like David Stearns in that position, then of course we know it's not Billy Epler running the show. That's not his thing. But yeah, I feel like it's a really important statement to make. Literally statement and just, presentation that this is David Stearns's job. It's his project. He is literally the president of baseball operations. He's going to, hopefully give Steve Cohen a little more golfing time. So he can not have to be running a baseball team. But no, I mean, I don't, there's been a lot of trying to make this into a Lol Mets and I don't appreciate it. It is not a Lol Mets.
They didn't disrespect Buck. He got a standing ovation. I mean, he had to have known the writing was on the wall.
Yes.
Like, he's been in baseball for a long time. I'm sure he was not surprised that this happened.
He got to kind of like announce his departure on his own terms, which is pretty rare for fired managers.
So he got.
Although I do wish it hadn't leaked quite so quickly. I mean, it was like, was it an hour?
No, I mean, it was immediate because they were there in the. It was his presser, so all the beats were there on their phone. Yeah. So they just all like live tweeted it, which actually Buck Showalter sort of criticized during the presser.
I meant like the fact that he was really like, because he had presented as kind of a mutual thing, and then but almost immediately they were like, it's not really mutual. He was fired. I was like, give him a couple of hours to just pretend that's not the fact. But yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I was there at the game, and it was like the crowd was really like happy to be able to acknowledge him. And, you know, I can't remember exactly which pitch it was, you know, like the last pitching change that they had. And he got a real standing ovation. That doesn't happen.
Oh, yeah. When he brought in Anthony Kay and Anthony.
Yeah, that was it.
Let's not talk about that.
No, that's not important.
No, that's minor at this point.
To quote my son, what the hell is this?
Yeah, that's about it.
And also, can I just point out that Denny Reyes was not worth sending Lucchese back down to AAA for?
Yeah.
I'm sorry that he didn't
do that. No argument here. But yeah, I mean, of all the things that the Mets have botched, like, this seems like the one thing they didn't botch.
They didn't.
Let them have that.
No, they didn't botch it. And
I didn't know anybody was upset about it until the beat started, like, angrily tweeting stuff. I'm like, I really didn't know this was a problem. The way it was handled. And they even had like a little graphic on the big screen for Buck. What else more do you want?
It's not a problem. I don't understand. Like, the people who are getting worked up about this stuff are like the type of people I think who find stuff to get worked up about and need to be mad about something all the time.
Or just are wanting to shame the Mets. And that was a Wilpon thing. Like, you don't have to go looking for problems when there isn't any.
It's part of, you know, I think that's something that was remarkably successful during Buck's tenure last year and this year, because this is truly, you know, a tale of 2 years for Buck Showalter and the Mets. But, like, there was not a lot of drama. He didn't give them a lot of juicy tidbits. There was no locker room fights. There was no chairs being thrown.
It didn't stop people from trying to make create locker room drama where there wasn't any, because they had to fabricate it because it wasn't there.
Yeah, and I hope that if the New York sports media has learned anything from the last few years, it's that there doesn't always have to be a story, like a juicy, like, you know, messy drama kind of story.
A
like
scandal.
Like, that's just not, that's not what's going on here anymore.
Yeah, sometimes teams just suck. And that's what happened. It wasn't because the players weren't getting along. It's not because Buck lost the clubhouse. They just all got old at the same time, and the bullpen just got really bad at the same time, and there's nothing else to look for. There was, you know, you don't have to manufacture drama when the answer is right in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, that was that exact point was exemplified really well by a recent piece in The Athletic from Tim Britton and Will Salmon that everyone should read if they haven't already. It's like a week and a half old at this point, so I think a lot of people have already read it. But if you haven't, you should go back and read it, and we'll link it in the show notes and tweets and such. But they did sort of a post-mortem on the Mets and where did it all go wrong and things like that. And I mean, the article isn't very satisfying in the sense that the overall conclusion is they just underperformed. I don't know what to tell you. But the quotes that were within the article from different players were interesting and illuminating and thoughtful, I thought. Of course, everyone, Mets Twitter, latched on to the Tommy Pham quotes from that piece, which were a very small part of the overall article. But of course, they were the juiciest, like Maggie said. Everyone's always looking for
a story. I mean, to be fair,
story.
That's what I read the most as well. That was the first. Oh, look at that. Guilty. Guilty.
And so, I mean, Tommy Pham basically said that it was the least hardworking group of players he had ever played with. He purposefully made exemptions for the, like, what he saw as the leaders on the team, aka, I think it was Francisco Lindor, Pete Alonso, and Brandon Nimmo, I think were the guys he called out as the leaders on the team. He said he had no problem with them and their work ethic, but he felt like overall the team was lackadaisical, which, I mean, I have no idea if that's true. And I'm not in the clubhouse. I have no idea if that's true. What I do know is that Tommy Pham is a personality and it says inflammatory things and has had issues in the clubhouse in the past. We all know this.
Well, and I would also, and this was actually something, and I'll like shout out to the MMO guys who had me on last week. I learned, you know, I knew somewhat about Tommy Pham as a person, but one of the things that I had kind of forgotten is that he is a crazy workaholic.
Yes.
And yeah.
Always. Because, you know, and he's one of those guys who is not like, you know, he's not Mike Trout. He's not like some supernaturally gifted physical specimen. He does have to work his ass off to get where he is. And it's a bit of a complex, some might say. So that context also helps for understanding that, like, working hard and working Tommy Pham hard might be two different things.
Well, right. And I think even Mark Canna pointed that out too, because of course then they had to ask Mark about it. And he said that Pham basically is that. He's a workaholic. He's, you know, he's like, just because you're not working out to his level doesn't mean you're not working out. And so, and Canna had nothing but nice things to say about the organization. So, you know, taking one player's quote, like, you know, one snippet of a quote and having that be an indictment on the entire team and for 2023 just doesn't seem fair to
sounds
to
like something
the team.
Somebody would do if they wanted drama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So overall, like, Buck's tenure as Mets manager, as Maggie said, will be marked by a tale of two seasons. In 2022, he was manager of the year. At the end of 2023, he was fired. I think, you know, obviously we've talked about these points on the podcast before. We don't need to rehash them all. My personal feeling on the matter is that I was supportive of Buck Showalter's hiring at the time. I think he's a wonderful human being. And it was a refreshing change of pace to have a manager who I didn't hate looking at his face during post-game pressers. And I actually found interesting the stuff that he had to say. And I thought he was like a good person, which is a lot more than you can say for a lot of Mets managers of the past. I do think that he isn't a particularly good in-game manager, but there are a lot of managers managing in baseball who are not particularly good in-game managers. I thought he was an excellent manager of personalities, which is why part of why we didn't have these clubhouse problems, despite people trying to stir them up. And I just hope but I don't think he deserved to keep his job in the end. I think I tweeted, I'm not going to miss Buck Showalter the manager, but I am going to miss Buck Showalter the man. And I feel that very strongly. I just hope that whoever replaces him is as good of a human being as he is and as good at managing personalities as he is and a better in-game manager than he is. That would be great.
Well, I think it's easy because this season was so horrifically disappointing. It's easy to miss that it could have actually even been worse.
Yeah.
Because of the clubhouse. This was such a like recipe for disaster in some ways. Cause you had all of these, you had all these veterans with big contracts and also like well-earned, but egos. Certainly, you know, Scherzer and Verlander had certain expectations of themselves. And you also had a lot of young guys being dropped in on all of that. And both the expensive veterans and the young guys were all struggling. There was a lot of potential for anger and blame, and that didn't happen. And I know that there are probably some folks out there who think that that was the problem and they should have all just like had some giant brawl or whatever, and then they would have remembered how to play baseball again, because that's how it works. But, you know, and I think like that's, thank you, Buck Showalter, for not having any brawls in the clubhouse, because really, like, that is sort of the vibes that it could have very easily slipped into.
Well, and I think he was the manager that they needed at the time for that reason, because, I mean, I think it was Mike Puma who tweeted that after he won Manager of the Year, Jacob DeGrom sent him a heartfelt message saying, thank you for changing the clubhouse culture. So even though Jake left, he still appreciated what Buck did. So I think that definitely needed to be done. And Buck was probably the perfect guy to handle that. So now you have these core group of, and we have, as we saw, all the players came out to applaud him too. They were very close with him. So now you have this core group of Lindor, Pete, and Nimmo.
Pete sounded especially moved.
Yes, yes. And Lindor, we know too, with Kalina. But so now they can take, you know, those leadership qualities that they've learned from Buck and, you know, take that going forward. And we even saw that with Lindor this year. Every year he was blaming himself. He was out in front of his locker, never pointing fingers, always taking the blame, but always, you know, also trying to find positives, always sticking up for his teammates. If, you know, something went wrong, he was like, no, you know, that could have done better, but we lose as a team. And so I think having Buck around for Lindor also made him a better leader. That's just my gut feeling.
I totally agree.
Because Lindor's leadership really came through this year, and I can only imagine that was because he had Buck around.
Yeah, I it seems like Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso got the news hit them particularly hard. Yeah. Francisco Lindor is a professional, as we've seen many times, and he's never gonna, you know, be openly critical of the decision of an incoming president of baseball operations. But he talked about how much he appreciated Buck Showalter. He said he let me be Francisco Lindor, which I think is absolutely true. And then there was also a report from, forgive me, I cannot remember who it was. I will check. Oh yeah, Mike Puma. Linda, you said it, that Pete took it the hardest, apparently, when he found out that Showalter was fired. And he had to be talked out of going directly to Steve Cohen, apparently, to voice his unhappiness about it.
I don't know how much that, I believe. Not
go up to Steve Cohen and criticize him. Dear God, please
don't
do that. Not
when you want an extension, Pete, please.
Oh, well, I mean,
or you
I
want
hope,
to be living the next day.
I certainly hope that this doesn't affect those yeah. talks at all.
I can't imagine.
Well, certainly if it did, you'd have to feel better after David Stearns going up there and saying everything short of he's going to be a Met forever, because that was certain vibes. Not to jump the gun on the show notes, I realize. We're getting
there.
Oh,
yes. But, no, yeah. Perfect segue. Perfect segue.
Speaking of which.
Yeah. So
David Stearns.
The highlights of the Stearns presser, I thought, were, well, I'll go slightly out of order per the segue, were number one, he talked about Pete Alonso as if the extension was already done. He didn't say that. But he was like, I expect him. He's definitely said out and out that he's not trading him, because he said, I expect him to be the opening day first baseman next year. And he was very much smiling when he said that, in a way. And the way that he said it just made me think, like, you know, oh, they're really close on an extension. Like, I have no like actual proof to back that up. It just feels like Stearns doesn't say that unless he's pretty sure that they have an extension in place. So someone as like, you know, careful and thoughtful as David Stearns doesn't just say that. So
I mean, the baller move like the vibes would have been to announce there. It, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
like, you just walk in and be like, hey, my first move was Pete Alonso staying.
I think that people would have gone feral if that happened. It would have been really cool.
To introduce yourself to an organization.
Yeah. But I think partially, like, they wanted Buck to have his moment. And they kind of need a little bit of time to, like, settle in. He specifically would not comment on Shohei Ohtani. Was like, I don't think I should be talking about potential free agent targets on day one, is what he said. But the other big highlight of the Stearns presser was, in my view, was just him talking about how much it means to him to be president of baseball operations for the New York Mets, the team he grew up rooting for. He even said, this is my home. And that made me want to run through a brick wall for the man, honestly. That
and also him saying, cool. I want my kids to be Mets fans.
Oh, so cool.
God, that's so
sweet. Oh, sorry.
No, because I'm like, that to me is a true Mets fan, because nobody chooses to root for the Mets. We right. all get it from our parents or from some family member or friend. So I'm like, that to me is what a Met fan really is, like being saying, I want my kids to be Mets fans. So I'm like, he really is one of us.
Well, and I love it because, like, to me, it makes me feel like I can picture a couple of decades with David Stearns. It helps / does not help that he is younger than me. That's okay. It's fine. It's fine.
We're not.
I like that he's younger than me. It's great. It's perfect.
Cool. Totally cool.
But you know, for a team that has had more than its fair share of leadership changes over the last several years or ever, it feels like maybe I'm over, but it feels like they've always been in turmoil every few years for as long as I've been conscious of it. But it gives you a vision of, like, he could just be really good at this and stick around and do it for a while. He could run the Mets for 20 years. And when he talks about wanting his kids to grow up as Mets fans, it makes me feel like he wants that too.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, you know, and I think we've said this before in Steve Cohen's favor, which is that he likes baseball.
Yep.
It's not like he wasn't spit out by some, like, NBA Wall Street machine to try to make every team 1% richer. Like, that's not, you know, that's not the game that he's playing. He likes baseball. Now, does that mean that he will be, like, who knows what's going to happen? I think he's really good. And I think he's going to be fine. I think the team's going to do well. But even if I was wrong, man, he still does like baseball, and that counts for something.
I think it does.
I was wondering, I'm like, even though he was with the Brewers, did he still keep tabs on the Mets? Was he still secretly rooting for them? Because you can't just give that up. If he was a childhood fan, and what did he say he was at Mike Piazza's first game?
Yeah, I think he did say that.
Yeah, no, so you don't just give that up, even if you get a job with another organization. So I'm like, no, he was secretly rooting for them this whole time. That's the story I have in my head.
Sleeper agent.
Yes, he was a sleeper agent.
Yeah,
and Carlos Gomez trade went fell through.
true. Like Maggie said, I just think it's just a different vibe to have an owner and now a president of baseball operations, just leadership and the guys in charge. It's cool to have those guys be Mets fans. It's just really cool. How many organizations get that, really? Like, how many organizations have ownership and their top executive be fans of the team first?
And, like, you get all these platitudes from the other owners, like, oh, we fell short of our goals while they're not spending. It's like, no, you didn't ever cared. Like, the Angels. They didn't even bother. Yeah, Art Moreno didn't even bother showing up to, like, give Shohei Ohtani his team MVP. So at least now with Cohen, he also, like, not only do you know he's a fan, he's also willing to back it up. Like, no other owner, there's very few other owners who now are willing to invest in the team they own. So right. It's nice that hopefully that'll just kind of spread out the entire organization, that you know, no matter what, they have the organization's best interests at heart. And that's not always the case, which is sad that that's not always the case for other teams.
In fact, it's the exception.
They interpret best interests differently.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, going back to the Wilpons as an example, like, they weren't Mets fans. Like, the Mets were an investment opportunity to them. They were, you
know, Dodger fans.
Yeah, they were Dodger fans. And so, and this is like true of most owners. Like, they're most of the time, they're not actually a fan of the team they own, or they weren't before they owned the team. And like, they more so, they sometimes don't even care about baseball at all. So most of the time, even like, they didn't grow up with baseball. They are just a rich guy who owns a sports team because it makes a lot of money
or inherited it.
Yeah. To have a president of baseball operations, like, I feel like truly understand where the fan base is coming from and what it would mean to this fan base, this city, this community to win a championship. I think that means something. I think that's important. It's meaningful.
I think he'd run through a brick wall for the team, which is how that feeling gets passed down to us.
Well, yeah. Nelson, it's just weird to think, like, he has the same memories we do.
Yeah. We talked about Mike Piazza's post 9/11 home run, and I was like, yeah, he's just like me for real.
Yeah,
like,
if any of the beat guys are listening right now, first of all, I apologize about all the drama stuff, but also I will personally request one of you to ask him what he thinks about when he thinks about Luis Castillo in Yankee Stadium, and
no,
just like, see what happens.
Yeah, see if he gets angry. See if his blood pressure goes up.
Right. It was a good presser. I thought he was very thoughtful. He was insightful. The third sort of highlight for me, notable thing, was someone asked him. I wasn't paying attention to who was asking which question, so apologies. I don't remember who it was who asked him this. Kudos to whoever it was, though. I wish I remembered so I could shout them out, but I don't remember. One of the beat reporters asked him, like, what is your plan to build a long or like a perennial competitor, basically? Does that begin next year? Does that begin in 2025? Does that begin, like, when does that begin? And Stearns answered without hesitation, it begins right now. And so yeah. I think that he was reassuring the fans that they're not retooling in 2025. I mean, it might end up that way, but I think he's reassuring the fans that that's not the Mets' intention to step back in 2025 and refocus, or step back in 2024 and refocus for 2025. Like, you know, Max Scherzer said that they said to him, and I don't think that Max Scherzer is lying. I think the Mets may have been fibbing to him.
Well, they could always say
no trade clause.
That was Billy Epler's vision, and now David Stearns has a different vision.
Although it is, yeah. I mean, some folks, not either of you, some folks do kind of seem to forget that David Stearns is not the general manager.
Yeah.
And in fact, Billy Epler is the general manager. And yes. those are two different roles.
Yes.
And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I don't actually mind Billy Epler as the general manager, with David Stearns actually guiding the larger vision,
yes,
of the team. Like, the general manager needs to go out and, like, sign the dudes to contracts, but the president of baseball operations is going to help guide that. What, you know, what kind of dudes are we looking at? Like, Billy Epler is going to go, let's get optionable arms. And David Stearns is going to say, that's dumb as shit. Sign good relievers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Developing organizational philosophies is probably what David Stearns is there for.
And we already know that Billy Epler is at least pretty good at the, like, going out and getting his guy part of it.
Yeah.
Like, I think he'll get that. Yamamoto.
Yeah. Like he did that with Kodai Senga. Yeah. Hopefully he can do it again with Yamamoto. That would be cool. Yeah, I mean, listen, I think I am fine. Like Maggie said, I am fine with Billy Epler as the general manager now that there is Stearns there sort of above him guiding the whole vision. I do also think in these conversations about Buck Showalter and where the 2023 Mets went wrong, there's a lot of back and forth about it wasn't Buck's fault or it was Buck's fault and how much blame does the manager take, and not enough Billy Epler being brought up in any of these conversations. And I just find it interesting. I'm not saying it is only Billy Epler's fault that the 2023 Mets were bad, but I am saying that he is somehow like skated past any blame. And that's fascinating to me because this is his team that he built.
Yeah. And like Maggie said, maybe somebody, he needed an adult to tell him optimal arms is probably not the best way to build a bullpen.
Right. Right.
So, like I said, like have David Stearns building philosophies, organizational philosophies, like analytics, because again, Justin Verlander came in very surprised at how far behind they were. So having somebody to oversee that and to, you know, maybe be more open to criticism, because the person who heard that from Justin Verlander went screaming to the post to complain about it. So maybe tightening that up too and seeing, I think he said, you know, I can't remember the exact quote, but he said everywhere has to be strong, because in a competitive field like this, the weak link is always going to be found. So to me, yeah, that sounds like he will be shoring up all their deficiencies from years past, which is still, you know, we're still recovering from the Wilpons. That's, you know, a lot of those people are still, I mean, they fired a lot of people this year. So now hopefully, you know, it's a clean slate and they can start fresh with somebody else in charge who has, you know, a vision and a philosophy and can help guide the organization that's been lacking for so many years now and that, you know, hasn't been able to really rebound under Sandy first and now under nobody. So finally we have an adult in the room is what I'm trying to say.
And when asked about, I think he was, I can't remember the exact wording of the question, but he was sort of asked about how, like where the 2023 Mets went wrong, basically. And he said, you know, when you have to build an entire team out of free agents, you tend to skew a little older. And then you have issues with injury and age-related decline. And that's what happened to the Mets. It wasn't a lack of talent on the roster, certainly.
And he said it wasn't just a Mets problem either.
Right. He said that this is a problem like in any organization that tries to build a winning team that way. And unfortunately for the Mets, if they're going to win next year, they're going to have to kind of do that again. Hopefully they will, you know, get luckier and be smarter. Both, because I think that some of it was bad decision making, but some of it was also bad luck.
Yeah.
With the free agents that they end up with. But unfortunately, in the short term, while, you know, the Mets, this new era of Mets continue to try to get better at player development and such, you know, there's not much help coming down the pike. I mean, we do have the baby Mets. It's great. Hopefully they at least a few of them pan out.
And the next gen baby Mets too.
So
we all got it at the trade deadline. Yeah, all the ponies right now.
Yeah, so we shall see. Hopefully that will work out. But, you know, none of those guys, aside from probably Francisco Alvarez, are like are in their roles in Penn next year. So you're gonna have to fill a lot of those gaps with free agents, and that's not to mention obviously they need at least two major league caliber starting pitchers. They need to fill basically an entire bullpen. They have Edwin Diaz coming back next year, which is great. They have potentially Adam Ottavino on a player option, which is interesting because Adam Ottavino has changed his tune recently in a disconcerting way. He had been saying like, oh, I love New York. I want to stay in New York. Like every indication he's going to like pick up his player option. But then he kind of did like an, in his most recent, like the most recent time he was asked about it. I forget when it was, which that's not great, but who knows? I don't know. I don't know what's going
Maybe
on.
Maybe they caught him on an off day. Yeah. He just wasn't feeling it that day.
Or he just was turned off by how the Mets sold everyone at the trade deadline. You know, maybe he was discouraged by that. I don't know. I don't know what's going on in Ottavino's head. But point being, with the bullpen picture for next year, there is a chance that he will be back. But there's also a chance that they have to fill his spot if he chooses to not exercise his player option. So if and I think Brooks Raley has a team option.
I think so.
So, which if it's a team option, I imagine it's likely to be exercised. So, but still, that's like a lot of bullpen spots. Yes. And I don't want to see the parade of dudes we've been seeing these like during September, during Dollars for Dingers, the parade of dudes. I don't want to see any of those guys anymore.
No, never again. Please.
No more. Phil Bickford. No more Trevor Gott. No more Reed Garrett. None of that. I'm sorry.
I didn't even know who Reed Garrett was.
Oh, he's been
Credit
here a
to
few
Reed
times.
Garrett. He was the only one who could get any outs this weekend, it seemed like.
But when they brought him in, I was like, I don't know who this is.
Never heard of him before.
He's been up a few times, Linda. This is like his third call up this year.
Are you kidding?
Always a great sign.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oops.
Grant Hartwig. None of that. None of that. I'm sorry.
Trevor Gott. Doesn't Gott have another year?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, God.
I mean, but he
can. Well, that fills one of the roster spots. Yikes.
Please, no. I don't know.
Oh, God.
Anyway, David Stearns has his work cut out for him is all I'll say. And he talked about, you know, filling an entire team with free agency and the pitfalls of that, which he's not wrong, but gestures at the Mets. Buddy, you've come into a situation where you're going to have to do that again.
So. I mean, he's a Met fan. He knows this organization's a mess.
Yeah.
I think he knows what he signed up for.
Yeah, he does. Well, hopefully he succeeds. I want him to succeed. I really like him. He's a very well-respected executive around the game. He seems very smart and like he knows what he's doing. I hope that he does a good job. We shall see. Only time will tell. So, before we move on to our like wider baseball segment, news-wise, I just wanted to ask the two of you, if you're going to watch the playoffs since the Mets aren't in it, and if you are, who are you rooting for?
No, they canceled the playoffs this year, Allison. I don't know what you're talking about.
Except for the Orioles. Isn't it crazy? Playoffs with only the Orioles, but it's going to be great.
I'll be watching at least as long as the Orioles are not eliminated. So I will be rooting hard for the Baltimore Orioles. I think by hierarchy of teams in the playoffs is 1 Orioles, 2 Brewers, 3 all the non-NL East teams, 4 NL East teams. that's the tiers. Those are the tiers.
I want to root for Marcana, but I'm still so bitter about 08 that I can't root for the Brewers.
Yeah, I'm not as mad about that. I don't know.
All I remember
I
from
hold grudges. I can't.
See, I have like very distinct grudges around 2007. Like I might have to punch Tom Glavine in the face if I ever saw him. It would be real bad. I'm sorry in advance. but 2008 is just like this blurry, like pain canvas. Like it's just nothing but like sadness.
Oh wait, Maggie, I do have a question because everybody was saying that Steve Cohen looked awful and they're like, this is what managing the Mets does to you. And I remember you called Terry Collins Gollum after managing the Mets. So what does that make Steve Cohen?
Oh gosh. That's a great question. I gotta figure this one out.
No, did you see what he looked like at the presser?
He very much looked like a dude who was on a like 48 hour bender and then just showed up to that press conference.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Someone I think it was Brian, actually. Brian pointed out that he thought that he dyed his hair, and that's part of why he looked so different. And
but I thought he had no hair. Like, to me, the hair looked pushed further back.
Maybe he meant dyed his hair singular?
Like, he's like Homer now. He just has, like, little wisps, but it's mostly, like... Because somebody did a side
by
side.
No, but I think it's more prominent that they are wisps because I think he dyed it darker, so you can like see it more.
But to me, the forehead looked bigger, though.
I don't know, but he also was just like,
"Hold on, is it a body double?
Is it Vincent D'Onofrio as Steve Cohen?"
He was wearing like three layers of collared shirt, and they were all disheveled in different directions.
But it was 75 degrees today. What does he need layers?
It was really weird. It was really weird.
I love the idea, though, that the Mets, like, having any connection to the Mets ages you like the president.
Yeah, no, I think it's absolutely that's true. The case.
That's but absolutely not now that true. David Stearns is in charge.
I was going to say, David Stearns looks very youthful. I mean, he is. He's very young, especially for a baseball executive. He's 38.
He's extremely young. He's
38. I want to see. He looks even younger, in my opinion. He has like a boyish face, I think.
He does, yeah.
And I want to see what he looks like in like 3 years. That he's the true test of the president theory, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how old can the Mets make David Stearns look?
Yeah, because he came in at young. Because
if you can make David Stearns look old in a short amount of time, like, oh boy, howdy, is it a real...
Well, that was like when Obama was president. You're like, that guy.
Yikes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like, I really hope that David Stearns doesn't age like Obama in his presidency.
I mean, he's allowed to age if he's there for 20 years, but not like 30 years.
Right, correct.
Although, Also, if he doesn't, that would be its own interesting story.
Yes.
We would need to, whatever his secret would be, he would need to give to the players.
Oh, we would have to perform like scientific studies on this man. Like, someone would need to like measure his telomere length if that's a genetics joke. That's only the real ones know. someone would have to measure the length of his telomeres if the Mets don't age him. we will. I'll talk to my people about that. We need to look into that very strongly.
You'll be the Mets geneticist.
Oh, the dream. That would be the dream.
David Stearns, if you are listening, there is your untapped market.
Yep. New market inefficiency. I don't want to say this to the process nerds. I would work for very little. That's fine. No, just kidding. I have
don't say it to the labor nerds either.
No.
I have two fur children to support. I can't.
Yes, think about the fur babies. I work so my fur babies have a better life.
So true. Yeah, so in wider baseball news this week, none of this is good. Usually our baseball segment's kind of a downer. Unfortunately, this week is no exception to that. So we'll start with Hector Neris, who used a homophobic slur to taunt Julio Rodriguez after striking him out. This was a term in Spanish, and Eugenio Suarez was on the on deck circle and heard it. So he confirmed that what he said was really bad. He literally said to reporters, "It was really, really bad, just so you know." So for some background, Neris and Rodriguez know each other. Like, they're friends, or as Rodriguez
used
put it,
to be.
Like, I thought we were friends, basically.
I think he said he's not going to talk to him again.
Yes, he did say that. And so he Rodriguez basically said, like, yeah, I'm not talking to him anymore. And this incident feels weirdly targeted because of Julio Rodriguez's previous LGBTQ support.
Sure does.
Yeah. Yep. Like, it felt very pointed. Like, obviously, unfortunately, in environments where toxic masculinity runs rampant, such as sports, hearing a homophobic slur is probably not all that unusual, sadly. It used to be even more common than it is now, but we've had a little bit of progress, but sadly, I don't think it's all that uncommon to hear those things. But I feel like you don't usually hear it, like, on the field while the game is happening.
You do nowadays. If you do, you hear about it. Like,
right.
That seems to be the only time you do hear about it.
Yeah.
Right. And they asked Nerys about it, obviously. And he kind of downplayed it and said, like, oh, I didn't mean anything by it. It was all part of the moment. And it's like, you can get a little too caught up in the moment and taunt your opponent probably a little too far. I get that, maybe. I mean, it still wouldn't be very good, but taunting your opponent, yeah, one thing. But using a homophobic slur is not just part of the moment, bro. Like, I'm sorry. That's not something that just, like, slips out of your mouth as part of the moment. That's something that
You're comfortable saying
if that's what you're saying about it. Like, oh, it was all part of the moment. It's like, that means that you routinely say that word, probably.
Which is what we said about Tom Brennan. Like, you're clearly exactly. comfortable saying that if you're just going to say it with other people in the room. You're not embarrassed to say it with other people in the room.
Exactly. So that was pretty shitty.
But good for, you know, Julio Rodriguez for saying friendship's over. We're done.
Exactly.
I'll be your friend, Julio.
Yes.
That sounds skeezier than I mean it. He seems very nice, and I bet we watch a lot of the same TV shows.
Yeah. Like,
we both really like baseball.
Yeah.
It's what we
think he's watching with anybody.
It's what we said on the show over and over, though, right? Like, this stuff won't go away until it is not acceptable by their peers. We talk about it in the context of domestic violence, but it's true of intolerance of gay people, of women. It's true of bigotry in all its forms. These things won't go away until people who perpetuate it are ostracized by their peers. And that's what's happening here. In a small way, I'm sure that Nerys is not going to be, like, blacklisted from the game entirely by all players because of this, but at least the guy who was the target of the insult, who was previously his friend, is now not his friend anymore because he said that to him. So hopefully...
It's a consequence that actually speaks to some people. Not every consequence is going to land. And if maybe losing out on a meaningful friendship is the consequence that speaks to Nerys.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. We would never find out if nobody ever has any consequences.
Yeah. Hopefully he learned something from it.
But I don't think he ever apologized.
No, not that I saw.
He tried to apologize to Rodriguez, and Rodriguez wouldn't pick up the phone, but I don't think he ever said, I didn't mean to say it or whatever.
No,
not that I saw anyway.
Yeah, no, he specifically did not own it in that way. He didn't say, I'm sorry for saying it. Yeah.
Very much an I'm sorry you were offended kind of moment.
Yeah.
So speaking of people who probably won't face consequences for their actions ever, because this man.
Oh, no. Oh, do we have to?
We have to.
No, we do have to. I know.
Yeah. I know.
So, Kurt Schilling. There is not.
Oh, there was a different one. Okay, never mind. Yes,
no,
this guy
a lot.
Too. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is I'm not gonna talk about the other one. We are not doing Trevor Bauer discourse.
Okay, thank God.
He's been in the news because I'll do it for 2 seconds. He's been in the news because he settled his lawsuit that he had against one of the women who accused him of sexual assault. He settled that lawsuit. So, and he made a video. I did not watch the video. There is no universe in which I have the stomach for that. I didn't watch the video, but apparently he made a video where he, like, presented all his evidence that this woman was like out to defame him or whatever. And of course, that resulted in all his stans flocking to Twitter to say that like she was lying and Trevor Bauer is vindicated and all this stuff. We're not going to talk about that.
All right.
We are talking about another scumbag. The
other absolute waste of human flesh.
Garbage. I think that Curt Schilling and Trevor Bauer are legitimately the two worst people in baseball. Ever. Yeah. They're the two worst ones.
It's a race to the bottom.
They're the worst. There is not a circle in hell hot enough or deep enough for Curt Schilling. I just gotta say that right off the bat. Like, I hate that guy.
Well, and the thing that everybody else has been talking about hating him for, rightfully, isn't even the worst thing he did this week.
I know.
No.
I know. Oh my God.
Anyway. I mean, this is like, I feel like people may think that we are overstating it a little bit.
No.
We are passionate. No. But no, he literally posted explicitly Nazi beliefs about Jewish people and about exterminating them. Like, explicitly. This is not like we disagree on the definition of fascist. This is like Jewish people shouldn't be around because they're bad.
We're not going to use like like euphemisms here or like adjacent language, like sympathizer. No. He is a Nazi. Mm-hmm. Curt Schilling is a Nazi. So there's that right off the bat. He's a Nazi. But then also, to him being a Nazi, he outed the fact on his podcast or on someone's podcast. It wasn't his podcast. I don't know. On someone's podcast. He outed the fact that Tim Wakefield was battling brain cancer, which nobody knew, and prompted Tim Wakefield and his wife to put out a statement, and the Red Sox too, to put out a statement like that basically said like they have nothing to talk about at this time. That Curt Schilling said some stuff about his health and we're not going to comment on it and we want that to stay private. And then like 3 days later, Tim Wakefield died.
And this is what his family had to spend their last time with Tim Wakefield doing is cleaning up Curt Schilling's mess. That is unforgivable.
Yeah, and then of course, again, he was hiding behind his religion. Like, I believe in the power of prayer. You just tortured this poor family who was suffering, going through probably the worst moment of their lives. And you're saying because you're a Christian, you did it? That was not a Christian move right there.
Jesus Christ being there like, you keep my name out of your mouth.
Exactly. I got nothing to do with this, man.
All these self-professed Christians doing very non-Christian things. But yeah, it's just really unfortunate that Tim Wakefield's death is marred by this conversation, and it shouldn't be. Instead, we should be talking about what a legend Tim Wakefield is and how devastating it is that the baseball world has lost him. The last great knuckleballer.
They couldn't give him the dignity to die in peace. Like, that was taken from him.
It was.
And that's like one of the worst things you could do to a person and their family, to take their choice away from them, to have peace at the worst moment of their lives.
Yeah.
And it's, he made it about himself, of course. Because now it's about Curt Schilling, but instead of Tim Wakefield. But it is nice also to see the baseball community again coming together to honor, who by all accounts was a great human being, on top of being a very successful pitcher.
Yeah,
yeah. Who did something special? I mean, again, the knuckleball thing. Like, that's
cool.
Especially now when there's nobody left. That's a special thing to hold on to. And, Red Sox fans were lucky to have that. And it's a shame that his passing had to get tied up with this. And I hope that, we can all kind of, as a collective baseball community, just decide to try to erase big chunks of this tale and just hold on to the part that that honors what Tim Wakefield meant to the baseball community.
Yeah.
And it was nice too that George Kirby broke out a knuckleball.
Oh my God, that was so cool. Yeah.
That was really cool. So again, like, the baseball community can be so great when it wants to be. And then you just have these few assholes who ruin it for everybody.
Reading Pedro Martinez's tweet
broke oh my God. My
heart into a thousand pieces.
Yes. Oh my. And Don Orsillo too has been tweeting a lot too.
So yeah, it's really sad. Taken way too soon, obviously. So really, really sad. And I feel like we would be remiss if we did not also mention Brooks Robinson in this conversation, yes. who also mm-hmm. passed away recently. And I was devastated to learn that. Yeah, absolute legend. And mm-hmm. hopefully the Orioles honor him with a World Series title. That would be pretty cool, right?
Well, and Anthony Recker, of all people, had a really good tweet about Brooks Robinson. He's like, it's a very sad thing. But he was like, but I'm also happy that I'm seeing all these Brooks Robinson highlights on my timeline. And it was so true because, you know, I never saw so many. I didn't appreciate. I've
heard so many awesome things about him. Yes. I mean, we do a bunch of awesome things, but so many great stories. And, you know, it's also, Tim Wakefield is like the epitome of like gone too young. And as much as it is so heartbreaking to lose someone like Brooks Robinson, it's always also amazing to be able to think of like, what a life.
Yeah.
There was a very touching there have been many touching tributes to Brooks Robinson, but there was one in particular that I found really touching from a local Baltimore publication that I will find, and I didn't have it loaded up, so apologies. I've already read it, but I will link it in the show notes and tweets. I wish I could shout out the author, but I can't remember the person who wrote it right now. But I will find it, and I will put it in the show notes and tweets. And I thought it was the best one that I read. So yeah, we won't end the show on that note. as much as we want to honor the loss to the baseball community, but we like to end the show on a happy note. So. We will end the show this week, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. I will say right off the bat that I think we all have the same one.
Let's talk about winning. I mean, it is helped out a little bit by the fact that I didn't actually do anything else this week.
Right.
There's not a lot of competition. But not that there would really be any competition anyway, because it was pretty, pretty awesome.
Yeah. Dollars for Dingers was great. We were nervous because the Friday night game was rained out, which created a doubleheader for Saturday, which kind of threw a wrench in our works because our original start time for Dollars for Dingers was 4:00. Which actually ended up being the start of game one. So we had to do a last minute pivot and start Dollars for Dingers at 2:00 and run it through the end of game one. And y'all showed out anyway. And that.
Yay.
Awesome.
Yay!
The best people.
Truly. We have the best people. We have the best people. I was so worried that the time change would mess up people's plans, and it would mess with the foot traffic that we usually get at Ebbs, of folks just coming into Ebbs, not knowing that our event is there. But there were plenty of people still there at Ebbs, and we raised over $2,200 that day alone at the raffle event, and it was awesome. And, you know, I don't wish that the plans get changed at the last minute every year, and I don't wish for last minute scheduling snafus, but I do wish we could have, you know, 4-hour long Dollars for Dingers.
Yeah, but less rush.
Careful what you wish for, Allison.
Yeah. I wish we could have that every year, but we can't. So this year was very special because we got to spend even more time with you guys, which was great. So congratulations to all the winners. We all had such a fantastic time. And
shout out to Ebs again for always being so welcoming and just being so awesome and being such a great partner to have. It's like, it's the perfect spot to have it because they're awesome. They're willing to, you know, really help us out, get whatever we need, like tape.
Like tape.
Move a pool table. Everybody there was just so nice and so helpful, and they were willing to work with us. And so we love you, Ebs. We'll keep coming back every year as long as you'll have us.
You're stuck with us.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere. But also, I was actually really shocked at also all the Phillies fans who came in and were actually like really supportive. Yeah,
no, we had several Phillies fans buy raffle tickets for what was mostly like Mets stuff. We did have a few, including Ebs. Shout out to Ebs because the Ebs prize pack is one of the few like
non-baseball stuff.
Yeah, or like I was gonna say non-denominational, even though I know that's not the right word.
When I was trying to lure Phillies fans in, I used the phrasing team neutral.
Yes,
that seemed to register.
Team neutral. And shout out to Baseball Prospectus for doing Craig Goldstein and everyone at Baseball Prospectus for donating a year-long membership, because I think that attracted a lot of ticket sales from the Phillies fans in attendance as well, since that was a team neutral thing. So yeah, we had a few team neutral things that were able to nab those Phillies fans. We appreciate you guys. So thank you to all the Phillies fans specifically too, who supported us. You know, we can work across the aisle. We're better than Congress.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I will notice. Granted, they weren't playing, but didn't see any Braves fans there. I'm just saying.
Just saying.
Just putting that out there.
Just saying.
So yeah, we will do more gushing about Dollars for Dingers in this week's Mensch of the Week. Usually I don't spoil Mensch of the Week, but this week I'll make an exception. We'll do a lot more gushing about every single person that we need to thank and all of the fantastic people who supported us. But suffice it to say that we're all very happy and all of us are so, so grateful and full of love for our community and how successful this event is and how it's grown every year. And the Mets won the game, which was awesome. Both
two games.
Yeah.
That's one.
And there was an Alvarez Grand Slam.
There was an Alvarez Grand Slam. So yeah, between the raffle event and our pledges, which we're making our way through sending all those messages out to folks who pledged with their final amounts. So if you haven't received an email or a message from us, you will soon, trust. Over the next day or two, you will receive a message with your specific donation amount, so you don't have to do any work of calculating it yourself. It's already been calculated for you, and you will get the link to our donation page so you can complete your pledge. So yeah, between the raffle event and all of our pledges, we've raised, I think, almost $13,000. We're getting close to 13,000. We're over 12,000. That's for sure. So yeah, really, really incredible, incredible showing this year.
And thank you to the Mets for hitting dingers too. Thanks, seriously, this was one of their better years.
Yeah, the
too.
Mets showed up.
Mets did show up. This is the best, I think, as far as number of dingers, this is the best year since 2019. Yeah. 2019 is the, I think, still takes the cake for the highest total of dingers, but obviously Dollars for Dingers was a baby little campaign then. Imagine if we had the cachet and following that we have now for Dollars for Dingers for the 2019 total. That would have been crazy.
Well, and also in fairness to the 2019 total, that was like 60% Pete Alonso.
It really was. Yes. Yeah, so it's our highest dinger total since 2019, which really helps because obviously, you know, it's tough. It's especially tough in years like this when the Mets are out of it by the time September rolls around and people are kind of checked out on the Mets. And it, like, Dollars for Dingers gives us a reason to stay checked in. And so shout out to the Mets for hitting all those dingers and making up for, you know, the comparative lack of interest compared to 2022 in the fortunes of the New York Mets. They helped make up for that and make our totals similar, despite the fact that folks were checked out this year, understandably. So it makes raising money in September a lot harder when the Mets are not good. But if they hit a lot of dingers, then they make up for it. So it's great.
Imagine if they were good and also hit a lot of dingers.
Yeah, we still need both to come together.
That's what we call the David Stearns effect.
Yeah.
We just need to get all the ducks in the row.
Let's go. Let's have all the stars align next year for the Mets to be playing meaningful games in September and to hit a ton of dingers in September.
This year we'll get all of the playoff bonuses for next year,
exactly.
I should say.
Exactly. So thank you everyone for supporting Dollars for Dingers. We'll gush more about it in this week's Bench of the Week. You have no choice. You have to hear about it again because we love you all so much. but in the meantime,
be less awesome next time. Just yes. Be terrible and then you won't have to hear about it at all.
Don't do that.
No, don't do that. Because also, let's be real, they would hear about it. We yes. talk about terrible people too. We'll talk
all
about
the
it.
Time. Yeah. All You're the time. Not safe.
You're stuck with us, folks.
More often.
They're going with this.
But while you're waiting for that, you could go to homerunapplesauce.com to check out all of our fantastic pods. You can follow Home Run Applesauce on Twitter and Instagram at Home Run Applesauce. You can support our work by going to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. All of our wonderful patrons can attest to the fact that being a patron pays off in the form of Dollars for Dingers perks, in addition to all of the other perks you already get, access to the Discord, bonus content, et cetera, et cetera. They can speak to it. So yeah, being a patron pays off, and it's only $5 a month, and it really, really helps. You can follow this show on all the social medias at A Pod of Their Own on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Blue Sky. You can email the show, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search Home Run Applesauce and you should be able to find all of our fantastic pods there on that feed. Please rate and review the show if you can. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets, and don't forget, there's no crime.